This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Jared Shoemate. He is a film director and has a new film out called Last Night Out. Jared, it's great talking to you.
Good to talk to you guys, too. Thanks for having me on.
And I'm also joined here with J.J. Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me on again, Robert.
Jared, your film, it's a short film. It's a horror comedy. Can you kind of explain just sort of the basic plot?
Sure, yeah. It's, like you said, it's a short horror comedy. Pretty straightforward. Few kids, young guy and couple of girls. They are buddies and they get together, meet up to hang out at a kind of an abandoned factory where they like to hang out and smoke and drink and just kind of chill out. But turns out, this time around when they hit the spot up, there's a couple of drifters moving through the town that have been squatting there and living there. And they just so happen to have caught themselves in a little bit of a sticky situation. And they all kind of meet together inside of the warehouse and run into each other. And some pretty extreme measures have to be taken to make sure that everything remains quiet and nobody gets in trouble. And it's it's a little quirky. It's a little weird. It's going to be one of those films where people are going to watch it and they're going to love it or they're going to hate it or they're just going to be really sort of confused as to what they just watched. But either way, they should get a couple little spooks and they should get a few little laughs out of it. So, yeah.
As far as the horror element goes, is there a supernatural element to it?
No. Initially, there was. In the original draft of the script, there was. It just became sort of... It was hard to find a balance between the supernatural element that was going on and the sort of old school campy slasher aspect of it. So, kind of meshing those two was the idea in the beginning, but we struggled with that a little bit. Just basically, mainly, I think, because of the time constraint on it being, having to be a short film. We're trying to keep it at 15 minutes, to hit that sweet spot for the festivals. And, eventually I would like to, expand on this story and broaden it out into a feature film. And at that point, I think, introducing the supernatural element back into it would definitely add a lot to it and make it, bring it back to more of the original true vision of the film.
So the official trailer is out and it's set to be released around Halloween this year.
Yeah. So I just talked to a few days ago. I talked to our theater here in town. We always do. This is my third short film that we've done, and each one we've kind of shot and here around our hometown and premiered it here at our hometown theater before we put it up online for everyone and send it out to festivals. So it's all clear. We're gonna have a screening at the theater here on the 30th, the 31st, and the 1st. And then after that, we'll probably put it up online on the 31st.
So this was filmed in the Carolinas?
Yep. Filmed completely in North Wilkesboro, North Carolina. It's a pretty small little town. Not a lot going on. Used to be a pretty poppin' textile factory place. Had a lot of furniture factories and everything, but now after that's it's all kind of gone. I find myself lucky in the sense that I have a lot of abandoned factories here that I can get a key to and just walk in and film whatever whenever. And we were lucky enough to get an old lingerie factory for this one, which we kind of it wasn't in the script that it was going to be a lingerie factory, but once we got that, I was like, let's kind of play on that. So inside of the factory was a lot of old vintage sewing machines, a lot of old lace and materials, a lot of lingerie catalogs and stuff. So we introduced all of that into the production design and played with that on the prop end of the film. And it was pretty cool. Yeah.
Is it kind of like the town in Blue Velvet? I think that takes place in North Carolina.
It's a little bit like that. Blue Velvet was filmed in Wilmington, which is down on the coast of North Carolina. We're in the western part of the state, sort of in the foothills, down below Asheville, North Carolina. So it's a little bit more rural. It's a little bit more hilly and some mountains and everything. Not a whole lot of coastal stuff, you know.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of horror films. They seem to be either they're either filmed in the southeast or the Pacific Northwest. I guess you do have some in the southwest, like The Hills Have Eyes. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, yes. They seem to be either the Carolinas or Washington.
It's a good spot for them, man. You know, there's definitely a certain atmosphere here. That we have, and it's sort of surreal, probably more so surreal for people coming in from the outside who are seeing it for the first time and seeing all of these sort of ghost towns almost. I mean, I'm not saying that North Wilkesboro is a complete ghost town, but it's, you know, it's not got a lot going on like it used to. And once you get in here and you see it, it's a lot different than being somewhere that's a little bit more populated or even on the outskirts of somewhere like Charlotte, North Carolina. It's just not quite as busy. And it's honestly, this town is kind of like, for me, it's been kind of like a studio backlot. I mean, I can walk into town and I know everybody. Everybody knows me. And I can, you know, pretty much get into any kind of building here that I want to. We get access to props and stuff from antique shops that they just loan out to us. Everyone's very friendly, but it's easy to build a sort of a creepy, dark atmosphere and vibe around towns like this. And I tried to do that with this film, and I think we did pretty good with it.
I was looking over your filmography. It seems like you've worked a lot of different genres with your short films. Do you have any like key inspirations with directors?
Yeah, the film that really made me want to be a filmmaker that I saw when I was younger was Wes Craven's Scream. And you know, ever since I've seen that movie, I've always wanted to make sort of a campy horror comedy. And it's funny to me that it took three times to get there. I would have thought that it would have been the first genre that I tackled becoming a filmmaker. But I did sort of a short thriller first called The Ramifications, and it got into a few festivals. It was a little spooky, but it wasn't really a horror film. The second film I did was a film noir set in 1946. It's all shot in black and white. We shot that all around town. And it's, again, sort of a thriller, drama. But then something just clicked this time. And I wanted to make a short horror film. I wanted to make a horror comedy that I haven't seen. And something that I've always wanted to explore, and I wanted to take it back to that initial inspiration from Scream and from Simon Pegg, you know, with Shaun of the Dead. And even there's, you know, with the film, there's a lot of Scooby-Doo-ish elements in it. I was a big fan of Scooby-Doo as a kid, and it's sort of like an adult version of Scooby-Doo, especially if we can get it to the point where we can expand it back into the original vision and add a couple characters and put that supernatural element back into it. It'll definitely feel more like Scooby-Doo for adults than anything.
With the theme of 80s horror films, I also noticed the music you use a lot of music from the new retrowave genre. Can you talk about that and the bands that you've used for your... I think the main song is Here for the Long Night, which is the one that you use on your trailer.
Yeah, so what was pretty cool about that was I knew going in that I wanted it to have sort of an 80s theme to it. I personally drive a 1980 Cutlass that I found that somebody had garage kept and over the years, so it's in perfect condition, and it's such a cool car. Anyway, a big fan of the 80s films, big fan of the 80s style. I love 80s music. I love the colors of the 80s, the pizzazz that the 80s had. I mean, it was just such a cool era. And I listened to, I'll just get on YouTube and I'll just search random music and I'll click on suggested links. I'm a big fan of music. I love all kinds of music. And not too long ago, I stumbled onto a channel on YouTube called New Retro Wave. And I started listening to some stuff on there, and that's when I started writing the script. And the music heavily influenced, I think, the final vision of what's going to be on the screen and what people are going to see. But there was a song that I found on there called "In for a Long Night" by Jerry. "In for a Long Night" by Jerry Galleries, and I emailed New Retro Wave about it and told them what I was doing and wanted to use the song. They had a licensing form on their website for music, and they got back to me and they told me, you know, just contact the artist directly about this opportunity. So they gave me his email. I emailed Jerry and told him what I was doing, sent him some of the posters that we were working on, and he graciously, just let us use his music, and it's an absolute perfect fit for this movie. And then there's some other music in it that sort of sent the original music that my buddy Grizzle Boogie, who operates out of Asheville, North Carolina, also contributed a lot of his tracks and music to the film. And it's just such a cool little soundtrack to it. I love it.
I also like the animated neon illustration that you use for your trailer.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so that was something that, was pretty much inspired by the title for Stranger Things.
I was thinking a cross between Stranger Things and Twin Peaks with the grain.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that, for sure. A big fan of both shows. Love Twin Peaks and David Lynch. Thinking about it now, this film definitely has David Lynch seasoning on it. You were talking about influences as from directors and filmmakers. David Lynch is certainly one of them. So I do think you'll see some of that in there. But the Duffer Brothers, you know, the guys that did the Stranger Things series, those guys are from North Carolina too. And
I think it's even filmed there. Maybe it's Georgia.
It's Georgia. I'm pretty sure it's Georgia. They're filming in Georgia. It seems like they're filming everything in Georgia. They cut our tax incentive here in North Carolina, and everything went to Georgia. So right now you only got a handful of independent filmmakers hanging around the state making some stuff, but a lot of people moved to Georgia. But yeah, the title, back to the title. I was really, really happy with the way that came out. And I like that you compared it with Stranger Things and Twin Peaks. I didn't even think about Twin Peaks, but I can see that.
Yeah, there's even a band called Prom Queen, which did a synth album that's a hybrid of the soundtrack to both shows, Stranger Things and Twin Peaks.
Huh, how about that? That's cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I really like David's work too, David Lynch's work. But I was wondering, since you mentioned the movie Scream, so with Last Night Out, are there any... Would you say it has this sort of self-aware, cheeky meta vibe to it, so to speak?
Yeah, I would say that. It's definitely cheeky. Definitely cheeky. The two drifters are brothers. One is an older brother. One's a little bit younger, but they're both in their, mid-40s, early-40s. And, you know, the older brother has been a drifter for a while. He's been out doing his thing on his own. His younger brother has just recently kind of came into the picture, and it's not explored a lot. Their characters or you can only explore the character so much in 15 minutes, but the younger brother, a little bit of his backstory is, you know, that he was recently divorced. He had, like, the quote-unquote, you know, white picket fence, perfect life, and then it all kind of crumbled and fell apart. So he thought he would join his older brother out on the road, drifting around the country. But something has snapped inside of him. You know, his whole world has crumbled, and he's got this just desensitized view on, you know, pretty morbid stuff. And his older brother is just trying to figure out what exactly is wrong with his, you know, with the younger brother. And it's pretty funny between them two. It's very tongue in cheek between them.
How did you select and cast the actors for the leading roles?
I'd say there's four main characters. There's five in total. The drifters, Ben and Andy, their characters, Nat Paget plays the role of Ben, and he's a local actor here in town, and we met several years ago during a play production, but he's been on a few TV shows. You know, he's had a featured speaking part on Rectify. He's been on One Tree Hill, and he opened up Sleepy Hollow, the latest Sleepy Hollow series that came out on Fox. He was the first one to have a line in the first episode. So me and him are good buddies, and me and him and another friend of ours have written a feature-length screenplay that we're shopping around right now out in your neck of the woods. The other character, Andy, his name is Travis Collins, the actor that plays him, and he's a good friend of mine in Nats. He hasn't done any professional acting. He's done some professional play theater acting, you know, but they just, those two together, you know, they've done some stuff here at the community theater that we're all involved with, and those two together are just comedy gold. I mean, they just play off of each other so well, and they grew up together, and they know each other, and they're just friggin' hilarious. And I knew going in, you know, they're Travis and Nat are also in my film Noir, The Picture Room, and they play opposite of each other. So Nat is the detective, good guy looking to save the dame, and Travis is the bad guy, and they didn't really get to play off of each other a whole lot in that one. So with this one, I really wanted to put them together and let them be one thing, and man, they just nailed it. The other characters, the other actors, are also actors, friends sourced from the community theater here. I got a pretty good eye for good acting and good actors, and I'll go watch the plays, and I'll, you know, when I'm watching the plays, I'm watching the actors, and I'm like, you know, I'm picking out who's good at what, who's good at subtlety, who might be good on camera. And, you know, they were all sourced from the community pool of talent here. And I like that, you know, I like working with local and regionalized talent as much as possible.
So there's the drifters. Those are the characters you're talking about, and then who are the primary characters?
The younger kids that are hanging out in the factory, there's Molly and Santo, so they're a couple, and they're kind of really they're just really playing themselves. You know, they're good friends of mine, and like I said, they're both actors that have done theater here in town. But I went in and I told them, you know, that I wanted them to just really kind of play themselves as much as possible. And they're kind of these colorful minded, open-minded trippers, you know, that are probably tripping on acid throughout the entire film. And they're just always having a good time and hanging out and loving life and everything like that. And then, so they meet their friend, Parker. They meet their friend Parker, who's the other character in the film, at this warehouse to smoke. She's sort of a punky grunge type character. The actress that plays her, Summer Rose, and again, there she really just kind of, you know, went about playing herself in that situation that I dropped her character in. And they all three, they did a fantastic job. They did a fantastic job. The production has been, honestly, the production of this film has hit so many roadblocks and so had to go over so many hurdles just to get it finished that it's a wonder that we even got this thing finished, which is weird because, you know, the film we did before this, The Picture Room, was a 1946 film noir. The production flow in it was so much easier and went so much better as far as production flow. And then this one, which is more modern day, which you would have thought would have been easier to pull off, has just been a constant struggle to get it finished. But I had a really talented team of people, really dedicated team of people, that just came out and did what they had to do to get it done.
How long did it take you to make the film? When did you start?
We started principal photography at the end of February of this year.
Can you comment on the special effects and costume designs?
Sure, yeah. So the special effects in it are nothing really to write home about. There's some visual effects, some digital blood in it that our special effects artist, visual effects artist, Joseph O'Connell did. There are some practical effects in it where we just did some old school water gun spraying blood excessively, you know, Evil Dead style kind of. Just over the top stuff in there. The costume design was pretty straightforward. Like I said, a lot, you know, most of the characters, three out of the five characters were really, aside from the Drifters, the characters were pretty much playing themselves in daily life. So maybe just characterized a little bit, and they wore their clothes that they normally wear on a day-to-day basis. And the production designers on the film, Chloe Robinson and James Robinson, they just recently moved out to Los Angeles too, I believe. And they worked with me on this one, and they worked with me on The Picture Room too. And those guys just really did a knockout, bang-up job on the production design. I mean, this film is probably got some of the best imagery that I've ever captured in it. So as far as being visually appealing, it's by far my best achievement as a director. And we had two DPs on the film. I was behind the camera for some scenes, and then we had Jim Coleman behind the camera on some scenes were a little bit more involved that I didn't want to be behind camera on. I wanted to focus on directing. But between the two of us, between the two of us behind the camera and the production design team, we really got some beautiful stuff.
As far as the comedy goes, is it more of a lighthearted comedy, or is there an aspect of a dark comedy to it?
Very much dark comedy. I enjoy lighthearted comedy as an audience member, as a viewer of films, but as far as personal taste, I love Hammer. I love In Bruges, you know. The film In Bruges was, you know, pretty dark but funny. It's mostly dark humor, and there's some slapstick kind of humor in there too, which I appreciate as well as a director. Going back to like some Monty Python type style stuff, you know, there's some of that in there. So that's pretty much how the comedy plays out.
Yeah, I was going to ask about, you mentioned that you were shopping around a screenplay. I see on your website you have a excerpt from a screenplay you did called Otto, which is about a outlaw in Depression era America. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I could talk a little bit about it. Otto is a project that myself and Nat Padgett and Jerry Langford started a little while back. It is a feature length. It was originally written as a feature length film based on the true story of Otto Harrison Wood, who was a 19th century outlaw from around this area. We broken it down into a 6-part series right now, and from the original feature length screenplay, we broke it down into a 6-part episodic series, and we have signed with a agency and a publishing company out in Los Angeles called Pandemonium Screenplays, and they are working on publishing the script right now in episodes, and they're shopping it around to some studios and stuff and production companies out there trying to get it picked up and made. But we did shoot an excerpt from it. We did shoot an excerpt from the script, and you're right, it is on my website. It's a pretty lengthy subject. I don't know how far into it you want me to go. I mean, it's something we've been working on really hard for a while, and we put a lot of time and effort into
it. I was just curious if you could tell us who Otto Wood was.
So Otto Wood was, like I said, he was a 19th century outlaw from around this area. He was kind of overshadowed by the Tom Dooley story in this area. A lot of people know who Tom Dooley was and that whole story. It got a lot of national attention and stuff, but Otto Wood, his story didn't get a whole lot of national attention. He was born here in Wilkes County, where we live, and he was raised by Devilance Hatfield from the Hatfields and McCoys, the families up in Virginia. And so his uncle was Devilance Hatfield. Now, at the time that he was being raised by Devilance was much older, and the Hatfield and McCoy feud had kind of settled down and everything. But nonetheless, the Hatfields were a pretty rough bunch, and he was brought up in that environment and went on to shoot his left hand off in an accident with a shotgun. And he had a limp, he had a lame foot that he had a limp in from birth. But somehow this guy, Otto Wood, he managed to escape from prison 9 times in his criminal career. Twice from the Central Prison in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he eventually ended up on the run and facing 30 years to life in prison for the murder of a pawnbroker in Greensboro, North Carolina, of which some say that he did do and some say that he did not do. Either way, he ended up shot dead in the streets in Salisbury, North Carolina, in a shootout with the law. And there's a plaque there on the corner of East and Ennis Street, I believe, where he fell dead to the sidewalk there. And it is a pretty remarkable story. And if we can ever get anybody to take a bite on that and really bring it to the audience and bring it to life the way it needs to be brought to life, it would be a really excellent, excellent series to devour on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or whatever. I mean, and just the cinematography that it lends itself to alone would be stunning, you know, from that era. But really interesting story, really interesting guy. You can search it online. Just search Otto Harrison Wood. I'm sure a lot of stuff will pop up. There's an old song, an old ballad that the Carolina Buddies wrote about him back in the 30s, I believe. Pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff.
It sounds like a great story to make into a series. So I hope that gets done.
Yeah, we all do.
And also you have posters available to promote.
Yeah, so we've got two posters up on Facebook right now that are pretty cool, kind of old retro style posters. Kenny Kevitt was the photographer for that, and he's out of Concord, North Carolina. He did those photos for the characters, and we did the design at our studio. But yeah, you can check those out on Facebook at Last Night Out.
With the film Last Night Out, when will that be available to watch online, and where will it be available?
So the trailer's up now. You can find that on YouTube. Just type in Last Night Out or Jared C. Shoemate, Last Night Out. I'm sure it'll pop up. You can find it on Facebook. Just type in Last Night Out. It will be online for viewing on October 31st by the end of the night. We're going to, like I said, show it at the theater here in town on the 30th. So that'll kind of be our hometown premiere. And then after that, it'll go up online on Halloween, October 31st. And you can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Facebook. I'll probably set up a URL, www.lastnightoutmovie.com, something along those lines. But if not, you can find it on Facebook and YouTube.
And as you were saying, your long-term plan is you plan on turning it into a feature length?
Yeah, right now that's definitely the idea. I would like to take this story and these characters and really dig into them and develop it a little bit more and see what it could be. I think it could be something really great.
Jared Shoemate, it's been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you guys.
And also, thanks, JG Michael.
Yep, no problem.